I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The status for Jaden, we'll put down as week to week. As you guys know, it's a rib injury, and we'll take him through, you know, all the steps at practice and assess how he's doing and keep working it through that. We're hopeful he can play, but we'll also make sure to take every precautionary step and do it smartly for the player and the man. And so I want to make sure I gave you all the updates that I had, and so it's not going to be something that's going to knock him out for a long term. And so, like I said, we're going to list it as week to week. And like I said, hopefully we'll play this week and we'll take it every day of it all the way through.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the voice of Dan Quinn. He is a lovely man. He is the head coach of the Washington Commanders. And of course, the Bears head to Washington to play the Commanders this weekend. They've moved the game. It'll be at 3:25, get more eyeballs on it. It'll be a big spot for the Bears looking to improve on their three-game winning streak. And that is scheduled to be the game of Caleb Williams against Jaden Daniels, number one overall pick in the draft versus number two overall pick in the draft. But it looks as if, or it sounds as if, and we had a long discussion about this morning. I think we both believe that week to week is different than day to day. And week to week sounds like Jaden Daniels may not play. Now, Dustin.
Well, it sounds like to us that that's the way we heard it. Not everybody heard it that way. Yeah. It sounds like CBS is going to be disappointed if they were moving this game to the afternoon slot to get more eyeballs on it, because it was Jaden Daniels versus Caleb Williams, 2 versus 1, 1 versus 2. But Dan Quinn is a head football coach in charge of getting his team to the playoffs and preserving and developing a franchise quarterback in Jaden Daniels. Both of those things, I think, that we heard are more – they're more in line with him resting or not taking any chances with Jaden Daniels Sunday than playing him. Playing him would be, it's still conceivable. It could happen.
Yes.
But I don't think that they're leaning in that direction, because then they would list him as day to day, not week to week.
Yeah, it's just a weird designation. And Dustin smells a rat, and he says it's gamesmanship, that they're just going to try to hold off when they announce whether he's playing or not. And so when they say they're hopeful, but that they won't do anything aggressive, they will be careful with how they deploy him. They're basically trying to get you to prepare for Marcus Mariota and for Jaden Daniels. Well, the problem with that theory is that Marcus Mariota kind of played a lot like Jaden Daniels. I get it. They're different players. There is a hierarchy to every starting lineup. But Marcus Mariota came into that game. There was no need to bring back Jaden Daniels in that game, because Mariota was playing great, because they were playing a bad team in Carolina. And he played well, David. He looked like he could do everything needed to run the system they were running.
He's one of the best backup quarterbacks in the league. They got him because they plan to start a rookie quarterback, and if he wasn't ready for that challenge, I think Mariota gave them confidence that he could run the offense in Cliff Kingsbury's scheme effectively enough to get by and actually be a threat. Look, Marcus Mariota is no slouch. I don't think. I've always kind of liked him. I know the Bears kind of looked at him coming out of college from Oregon. He was the second overall pick in 2015. This is his fifth team. He's well-traveled, because he never quite – was able to reinvent himself after leaving Tennessee. He had a stint with the Raiders. He was with the Falcons, the Eagles. He was a backup that season to try to rehabilitate his career. Now he's with the Commanders, and I think that he's one of the better backups in the league. And you're right, skill set-wise, similar to Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels, much more explosive.
Let's take a listen. This is the wide receiver, Terry McLaurin, and he was on with Rich Eisen on the NFL Network, and he's talking about what happened when their quarterback got knocked out of the game and Marcus Mariota came in.
You know, I play with multiple quarterbacks, and sometimes the game plan changes when your starting quarterback goes down. And for Marcus to come in and keep the exact same game plan, we were running the ball well and then using the play action and spreading them out vertically. The game plan didn't change when Marcus came in, and I think it's a testament to the preparation, the trust they have in him. But his veteran leadership since he's been here has been unbelievable.
He said that he's also helped the quarterback, Jaden Daniels, to get up and running. He talked about what a good human he is, but he knows the guy. They spent some time together. I think it's pretty interesting that you like, I played with a lot of quarterbacks, and they have, my God, but nothing changed. When he came in, and you think about it, the way we talked yesterday a little bit about the way Cliff Kingsbury runs his offense and the use of space and kind of spreading people, that's perfect for Marcus Mariota. That's what he did at Oregon.
Yeah, that's ideal, and that's what he thrives in, that kind of system. That's why I don't think the Bears can take him lightly. When we hear Terry McLaurin talk about the change from Jaden Daniels to Marcus Mariota, he's also not sounding like he's desperate, because this is a guy that survived Sam Howell and Taylor Heineke and Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you look at the list of quarterbacks that he has played with in Washington, he's been a dynamic, productive receiver despite never really having a proven quarterback to throw him the football. Now he's got two. I don't want to overstate Mariota's value, and I don't want to overstate how good he is. But on any given Sunday, he can beat you. And the Bears would be unwise to take him lightly if, in fact, they're preparing for him. I don't expect Jaden Daniels to play, only because we're conditioned to hearing coaches be a little bit more, less transparent, let me say. And I think Dan Quinn kind of tipped his hand a little bit by saying week to week, and everybody knows how important Jaden Daniels is to the big picture here. So why would you risk that?
Well, I mean, I don't.
Against this defense.
Have you ever had like a bruised ribs?
A chew hurts when you sneeze. It's painful,
right.
And you think
can't
that
laugh, you can barely breathe, and you're going to be wearing some kind of a protective
flak jackets
yeah.
You're
going to
have Montez Sweat coming at you, and you're going to have Big Bill, Andrew Billingsley coming at you, and Jervon Dexter coming at you, and oh look, there's Jaquan Brisker if he plays on a blitz. I don't think those are conditions conducive to healing for the rest of the season, and the Commanders have the rest of the season in a winnable division, and they're off to a better than expected start. I would be surprised if Jaden Daniels does play. Now, this is Tuesday. We're talking about before he gets back on the practice field. It's the day off, whatever. But I think we both would be a little surprised if Jaden Daniels is the quarterback the Bears face.
Yeah, well, I didn't like the week to week. I mean, Oh, he's day to day. Okay, well then he's going to play. Oh, he's week to week. So how many weeks? I mean, it's just a different turn of phrase, and it's one you don't get from coaches all the time. I also think, and I don't want to oversell this idea that the game plan doesn't change between the quarterbacks. There is a hierarchy. There's a reason one guy starts over another. I think it will be a little bit disappointing. Maybe from a network perspective, if you don't have number one against number two, especially if number two has started the season better than number one, and you can raise all this sort of speculation about who did what, when, why, where, et cetera.
But those are good points. If you are a Bears fan, if you are Matt Eberflus, if you are a Bears defender, you're glad. This is a break.
This
is a huge break in the schedule.
There's no doubt.
Jaden Daniels was playing, besides Lamar Jackson, Jaden Daniels was playing as well as any quarterback in the NFL for the first six games of the season. This is a difference maker.
He's a really good player. He's He's a guy who can throw the ball with accuracy, and he's a guy that – and he can throw it on the run.
He played one series on Sunday.
And he's a guy who can run.
He had a 46-yard gain on Sunday.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
And he's dangerous. He's got over 350 yards rushing. He has been accurate, completing over 70% of his passes for a rookie. Now, maybe people say, well, the scheme is simplified and it's a college offense. You know what? It's a college offense working in an NFL level.
They are scoring touchdowns on 60% of their possessions. Over the first seven games of the year, that hasn't happened since in 24 years. That hasn't happened since the year 2000. I believe it was the LA Rams. The Rams finished 10-6 that
greatest
that year,
show on turf.
But they were wide open, and they were scoring like that to open the season. Mm-hmm. So that is what the Washington Commanders have been doing to open the season. You're scoring touchdowns on 60%
with their rookie quarterback. They've got two good running backs. They've got a good offensive line.
Yeah,
Nick Allegretti's part of that offensive line, the kid from Illinois, and we know well. But I think
Chiefs champion.
He comes with a winning attitude. He helps create that culture for a new coach in Dan Quinn, who's all about it. When you hear Dan Quinn talk, don't you kind of smile? I mean, he's an easy guy to like. You know, he's a guy that you can imagine interviewing very well. I'm surprised he didn't get the Bears job. Remember back in
– Over Matt Eberflus.
Right? When they were both finalists for that job, I think if we go back and we listen to those shows, I expected Dan Quinn to be the next Bears coach because of the way that he interviews, the way that he connects with people, and the enthusiasm he has for the job. And you can see that and hear that in him this year. They're off to a very good start. They're one of the bigger surprises in the NFC this is so far.
Yeah, it's a really nice marriage of like ultra positive, upbeat defensive coach with a young, dynamic, spread the field offensive guy and a super dynamic quarterback who operates best when the field is spread.
It's very similar to the Bears dynamic. Yeah. It is. They got a rookie quarterback that has franchise quarterback potential. They've got a new offensive coordinator. And right now, Shane Waldron hasn't been as flashy, maybe, as Cliff Kingsbury. But you have a defensive-minded head coach that is leaning heavily on his offensive coordinator to run the show offensively and take care, and the defensive coaches will take care of the rest.
What did you think of Matt Eberflus, his comments when asked about, if they had looked at Jaden Daniels? He was asked about Cliff Kingsbury. You know, they in a parallel universe, they could be running a system similar to that by the same people with the same people in it.
Not going to lie, I didn't learn anything.
Well, I you know what I learned? I learned the usual Flusy, which is like, and I don't know if I like this or not, but it's always going to be his response, which is, it's all about us. It's about what we do. He said the same thing when asked about the division.
And the trade market.
And the trade market.
And the trade rumors.
You're so right.
So,
yeah, he was asked that's so
from our standpoint, we don't like it because we don't get any new information. I still don't know after listening to it a couple different times that Matt Eberflus, what he felt about meeting with Cliff Kingsbury or why he chose Shane Waldron over him.
They just talk ball.
I don't know why. Was it a mission to find out as much information about Caleb Williams change his offense?
You know, he didn't. Let's take a listen.
We didn't ask too many questions about it. He just gave positive reviews for Caleb, like all the people did when we talked to him. It was much of the same, but it was more about ball.
I mean, there's part of me that respects the heck out of that, though, because it's all about ball. With that guy, it's all ball all the time, all the time. Unless he's out hosting fancy parties with his, you know, cool house.
Yeah.
This is all ball. This is a guy that you're not going to talk to him about fine wine or art or literature or anything really.
Unless he's dressed for cricket on his lawn by the lake.
I don't think he's playing lawn croquet. He doesn't look like that kind of guy. I respect Matt Eberflus because he is pretty consistent with this, isn't he?
You know,
he's all ball.
The other thing that was very funny is, like, hey, you've got Nate Davis, who you want nothing to do with, and he's not even active anymore, and you got guys coming back. Are there teams looking to trade for? Are you going to trade him? And I mean,
didn't Mark Grody ask that question?
Yeah.
Intrepid reporter Mark Grody wanted to get to the bottom of the Nate Davis saga, and this is how Matt Eberflus addressed the Nate Davis rumors.
There's been some trade talk generated by NFL Network centering on Nate Davis. Is there anything you can confirm about that? And are you guys listening to potential offers for Nate Davis?
Yeah, I would just say this, that, you know, of course, you know, during this time when you're leading up to the trade deadline, you're always going to have guys that are in conversation for those trade talks. So I'm not going to talk about particular players or players that we're looking at potentially, but that's always going to be the case. It's part of the business. You know, it's an NFL player. You know that. And it's just part of that time that we're in right now.
That was also Mark Grody pointing the finger at the NFL Network, right?
Oh, that was pretty funny.
That was pretty funny.
Can you believe those idiots think you could trade Nate Davis?
Well, Matt Eberflus gave an answer that left open the possibility of them trying to move a guy that is probably immovable.
Can they get a fourth rounder for Velus Jones?
No.
Just thought I'd ask.
Okay.
Wasn't that a rumor?
Not a fourth rounder for Velus Jones.
Okay.
Not a fifth rounder for Nate Davis. They'd be lucky to do a pick swap for Nate Davis, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's a guy that somebody would have interest in. Do you?
Well, I mean, the thing is, you'd save a ton of money if you could do a pick swap. And you could get that contract off the books. It's just, he's making $10 million.
That's why you can't trade him.
Which is sunk cost.
But it's sunk cost, but it makes him untradeable.
Right.
Unless you have some other
too much money for
agreement.
A guy not
you hope he's not a negative drain on everybody in that locker room.
No one wants to trade for a running back. Just generally speaking, you can sign guys in the street.
These days, you might have one in your system.
But if you could get Khalil Herbert, if you didn't have a running back and you had a guy in Chicago that was available, would you give up something for him?
Well, that's a great question. The report last week was the Vikings were sniffing around about Khalil Herbert before they traded for Cam Akers. I have a couple thoughts on Khalil Herbert. He's been overlooked and neglected with the Bears because Roschon Johnson was drafted and DeAndre Swift was signed.
Yeah.
I still think that Khalil Herbert is insurance right now. If you do have aspirations to go play meaningful football in December and maybe even in January, I think you want to keep as many healthy running backs as you can. The return would not be worth getting rid of a guy that knows your system and you have depended on in the past. So, yes, people might call about him, but I think we both realize running backs aren't exactly hot commodities on the trade market.
No, they're not. I don't want to imply that I believe that they're going to be able to make a deal for someone. But I do think he has value. I think he's a pretty good player.
Give me a number. What round? Fifth rounder?
Yeah.
Yikes.
Fifth round.
I'd take a fifth rounder for Khalil Herbert. Yeah. I don't think they're going to get a fifth rounder.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, okay. Sixth rounder.
Okay, maybe. Then
you'd get a sixth rounder.
Yeah, I think
but
there's a
difference. I don't know what the value of that is.
Sixth rounders are guys who may be
sixth rounders,
roster fringe guys.
Justin Fields, unless you can find a way to get him back on the field.
Maybe you can. Hey, Mike Tomlin makes a lot of money. That's why he makes the money. That's why he went to Russell Wilson. You hear that?
I did hear that.
Great stuff.
Hey, we want to let you know the Blackhawks, the Bulls, the White Sox, they have a new home. The Chicago Sports Network. Tune in for more than 300 live games a year, plus a full lineup of Chicago-focused sports content. Learn more at chsn.com. CHSN, where Chicago comes first. And we are going to bring in the head coach of the aforementioned Bulls, Mr. Billy Donovan, will join us next on the eve of the regular season.
Tomorrow
we'll
night.
Get a chance to talk to Billy and ask him some questions about who's looking good and how many guys he planning on using.
Billy Ball.
And what are his thoughts heading into the start of the season? It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coach, what are you most excited about with this year?
You know, just the start of the season, for one. I think, too, how we can try to play, with our current personnel. I think we've got some backcourt players that, you know, can really help us force tempo and force pace. I think we can play a lot faster. I'm looking forward to that. I think we got a really good group of guys that will work.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That, of course, is the voice of Billy Donovan. And lo and behold, we have Billy with us. The Bulls head coach joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Billy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good to be on with you guys.
Well, we love talking to you, and we're delighted to get a chance to kind of follow up with some stuff. As you head into the season opener tomorrow, has there been anything that has surprised you or impressed you about this group heading into the start of the regular season?
Well, I've been really pleased with our guys, the way they've worked in camp. I would say that we probably have had no days, maybe one where I think our effort could have been a little bit better. But outside of that, they've been great. Really working to try to establish an identity of how we want to play. And it's been great to see Lonzo be able to come back and participate and see him be able to get out there more and more in practice, and then obviously the last two preseason games. So I really have enjoyed the group. They're really working. They're really, really trying. I do think this time of year for every team, there's always a level of optimism, enthusiasm as the season gets started. We certainly have got a tough stretch, right when we come out of the chute playing at New Orleans and then going into a back-to-back with Milwaukee and OKC. But I know our guys are excited to get the season started, so am I, and, looking forward to what's in front of us. And I think these guys have really put themselves in a position where they're in really, really good shape, and I think we've gotten better at how we want to play.
Great to talk to you, Billy. To what extent has Lonzo Ball's progress this preseason maybe cause you to rethink your rotation, or maybe on a larger scale, your expectations for this year?
Well, one is I was really, really happy for him personally for all that he's gone through and what he's had to deal with. He's a great guy. He's kept unbelievable, spirits about himself. I didn't know what to expect. I did see him down in Miami in August working out, and I thought he looked very good. And then you could see in training camp he looked good. There's things with Lonzo's game where the knee is not going to be a problem because he can use his brain, and he's so cerebral and he's so smart. And I think what you saw in those two preseason games he's played is kind of what we've seen in training camp. You know, he, for the minutes he's on the floor, is a productive player. I do think with the way we're trying to play, as fast as we're trying to play, we're going to need to probably have a rotation of about 10. And at times I've had, you know, rotations of 9 generally. But for us, I think we're going to have to go to 10. So we do have to look at, you know, Lonzo, because his rotation is going to be these short rotation and stints. And I give him a lot of credit from a guy that was playing, you know, 35 minutes a game for most of his career. Now he's got to go in and figure out, how do I play 4-minute stints of in and out? And he's done that pretty effectively. But that rotation piece of him playing in those short stints is probably going to be that way for a while.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And I'm sure that you've spent a lot of time contemplating how that works. In other words, 16 minutes a game, if you're working these 4-minute increments, do you put him on in this particular moment and try to get things, you know, geared up? Do you fit him in sort of carefully as to the flow of the game, or do you look for that sort of jumped up little piece that you know? I mean, he can hit a three. He's shown. I've been amazed that he looks as good as he's looked thus far.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. No, I mean, the rotation piece of when and the timing of all that, of him coming into the game, is going to be interesting. I think the thing we've got to figure out with this group is, you know, as they continue to work together, is Josh Giddey is similar to Lonzo in the fact, not that their games are similar, but they're similar in the fact that they're both pass-first guys. Like, they both, that's their game, is their passing. Lonzo does it in a little bit of a different way than Josh does it, and not to say one's better than the other, but one thing that they do is both guys impact the group with their passing. So, you know, do you want to have Josh off when Lonzo's out there? Do you want to make sure that you have really great floor runners with Lonzo, because one of his elite skills is the ability to advance the ball up the floor and generate, you know, advantage situations for yourself. You know, we're going to have to find a second unit. One of the things that's, I think, going to be somewhat, I don't want to say of a challenge, but with as fast as we're trying to play, I don't know if guys are going to be able to play a rotation of 9 or 10 or 11 minutes, you know, because that's a long time to absorb that kind of intensity level, to play at that intensity level. So, you know, that's why I think the 10th person can help. And what we don't want to have happen is, well, guy says, well, my rotation's 9-10 minutes. I got to pace myself here. We are going to have to play fast, and we're going to have to be able to try to win free throw line and free throw line. There are going to be times where athletically and physically we don't have the length and the size to deal with certain teams, and we've got to do it through conditioning and trying to wear teams down and just being in physically great shape. And how we mix Lonzo into all that will be important, but I do think you want to put him in a situation where the guys that are out there, because passing is his thing, that he can really, really utilize his skill set to help the group.
Billy, I know it's only preseason, but only the Celtics attempted more three-pointers per game than you did. You guys shot 48 threes per game on average. That's a dramatic increase from last year, where I think you were right around 32. Obviously, your transformation offensively is taking shape. Number one, is that sustainable? And secondly, is there a number that you go into each game thinking, we want to shoot this many threes?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's happening right now is the league's playing faster, right? And there's always a sweet spot, right? Like, you don't want to play at such a breakneck pace that you're turning the ball over, you're taking ill-advised shots, you can't get back in transition defense, and you're putting yourself in harm's way, right? But for us and our team, you know, we're not going to be the biggest, the strongest, the most physical. But what we've got to be is we've got to be in elite shape, and we've got to be able to run. Now, if you look at all the analytics, the best quality shot's the first 7 seconds of the shot clock. From the first 7 seconds of the shot clock, the shooting percentages in the NBA go down. And then the last, you know, 7 seconds of the clock, that's the lowest percentage shot across the board, right? So everybody's trying to run. I think the sustainability part is we've got to be able to sustain that pace. That doesn't mean that we need to shoot quick, right? But it means we need to generate good shots. So I think if you look at the game, the most valued shots in the game are layups, anything at the rim, and the corner three, besides the free throw line, right? I'm saying besides the corner three and the rim. You've got to get to those spots. So, yes, we've taken, you know, the second most threes in the league, but I think you got to look a little bit deeper. We were also second in the league in generating in this preseason corner threes, and we were top five in the league getting to the rim. So when you start to look at your shot profile, what you want to look at is, are you generating shots in those best areas of the floor, which is at the rim and in the corners? To your point, if you're coming down and the majority of your threes are going to be above the break threes, that's just the way it is, but you can, through penetration, getting to the rim, playing fast, playing downhill, attacking the paint, generate spray outs and kick outs that are going to be good shots. There's no question that most of your threes, if they can come off inside to out, dribble penetration, transition, those are your highest quality threes. So there's definitely a learning curve for our team of the kind of threes that we want to take. But I've been pretty pleased. I think our guys have done a good job with their shot selection and have moved the ball very well. And I think that's how we're going to have to play, you know, for us to, you know, try to generate a shot profile that's going to give us a chance. Because that was one of the things we were up against. You know, we weren't a team that took a lot of threes. We had a lot of guys that were elite in the mid-range. You know, DeMar is, you know, a Hall of Fame player, and that's where he's elite. But what you end up doing is you're battling the analytics battle, right, where all of a sudden you sit there and say, well, some team's taking 50 threes and you're taking 25 threes. It's hard to overcome that. Well, the way you overcome it is by getting to the free throw line, by offensive rebounding and, you know, generating fouls. So, you know, there's formulas that you have to look at. But I think as long as our shot quality is good and we're getting to the paint and generating corner threes, I've felt pretty good about the profile of this group so far.
I was talking to a friend of mine who's a big NBA fan, and he said to me, do you remember the draft? Of course I remember the draft. Who was drafted first? And I thought, oh, my God. And I had to go look it up. It was Zachary Richichet, and then a Frenchman followed by the Australian. And I'm like, oh, my. I mean, that'll come to me as the season goes on. But you got a good one. I mean, I think what we've seen from Matas Buzelis has been impressive. He seems like he's got a little swag. He seems like he's got a lot of skill.
Fearless.
And he seems, yes, he seems relentless and fearless.
I agree with you guys 100%. And I think the biggest thing for a person's growth that's young has got to be a fearlessness of not being traumatized by mistakes. I've seen so many young players that play the game to not make mistakes or play the game to be perfect. And it's impossible. It's an imperfect game. We're imperfect people. There's nothing perfect about anything. The one thing about Modest is he's not afraid. I don't want to say to take risks, but he's not afraid to put himself out there physically. He's not afraid to put himself out there in terms of taking some chances. He really, I think, feels deep inside that part of his learning curve has got to be through making mistakes. And I think that's a healthy mindset to have, where you're not going in there saying, okay, I don't want to screw anything up. I don't want to make a mistake. I don't want to do too much. And then you're kind of floating around. We need to get his athleticism into the game. We need to get his running into the game. You know, he's obviously got, you know, an incredibly live body. But I do think he will get better because he puts himself out there. And there's a fearlessness to him. There's a part of him that, you know, he's not really worried about it. You know, he's just like, okay, it's going to be information inventory for me to take in to figure out what I should and shouldn't do the next time. He moves on from things pretty quickly. He does hold himself accountable. I think one of the things that's interesting with him, and it's really rare for a lot of young players, I see it so many times, young players get wrapped up in what they're doing offensively, and his whole focus is wants to be better defensively. You know, he doesn't worry about the offense. He's worried about how he can get better defensively. So I'm very encouraged with him. And, you know, he's got a long way to go. There's a huge learning curve there. And part of it is he's so young. He's got to develop a routine. He's got to develop habits. He's got to know how to eat and sleep, take care of his body, how to, you know, pre-practice, post-practice, pre-game, post-game. There's so much stuff he's got to learn. And, you know, last time I was on with you guys, we had talked about the development piece. Like, everybody looks at the development between the lines. Those are development things that he's going to have to work himself through this season.
So, Billy, Zach LaVine was gone for a long time. And the first thing he did when he came back on media day was he took the microphone and he took over and he established the parameters of what he wanted to talk about, what he wanted to say. And I thought that was an interesting step forward for a guy that's been a consummate pro. Working him back into the rotation has been, I think, seamless, it looks like. But I think there's always going to be the conversation surrounding Zach LaVine, the things that he can't control. How would you describe the dynamic now and how different it is from before?
You know, I think there was a lot that Zach, you know, had to absorb and take in, you know, and obviously I'm not privy to all the conversation with his representation and the front office and those kind of conversations, right? But when I've had conversations with Zach, I've always enjoyed them. I think they've always been honest and open and straightforward, and I think the both of us have worked hard on our relationship. And I really like Zach as a person. He's a really good person. I think the one thing that I would tell you that I always felt in the off season with Zach that happened was when I would go meet with him, he would always, I think, take time, you know, after the season ended and reflect about, you know, how he could get better or what he could do better, or maybe how we could help him as a staff more, help the team more. You know, he was very reflective in that way. And, you know, I think probably his, you know, preseason press conference was very reflective, you know, for him. He probably reflected. He's been great. You know, I think the first thing is, in fairness to him, is he's come in healthy. You know, the last couple of training camps, he's not been right, in my opinion. Like, I have not, like, I've looked at him and seen him in camp, and I'm like, he's got a long way to go to get where he's normally been. When he came, when I saw him in August and then saw him in September, like, I knew he was in as good a shape as anybody on our team, if not the best shape anybody on our team. And you know, he's a funny guy. I said, Zach, man, you look like you're in great shape. He said, well, I've had since February to work out. What am I going to do? You know, so he's got himself in great shape, and his legs are under him. And I think with the way we're trying to play, I think it helps him. You know, I think the running, he's an elite runner, an elite finisher at the basket. He can attack the lane. He can get guys shots with his passing. He's obviously an elite 3-point shooter. So the sustainability, that we got to do that not only for him, but it takes advantage of what Lonzo and what Josh Giddey can do. It takes advantage of what, you know, Zach can do and what Kobe can do. So he's been great, Zach. He's worked hard, and he's been great in training camp. I think he's played exceptionally well. You know, if you look at his numbers in the preseason, I know he's not in a normal rotation in terms of playing a normal allotment of minutes, but he's done a really good job all the way around.
Billy, great stuff. Thanks a ton for jumping on. Best of luck in the year. We'll be following you and hope to talk soon.
Good luck, Billy.
No, pleasure. Yep, thank you. Pleasure to be on with you guys. Thank you.
That is Billy Donovan, fired up, you know, as he should be. Good stuff. We got Coach Wonstadt. He'll be with us next. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
Dave Wonstadt, Bears head coach for 6 seasons.
The Bears.
The Bears.
Super Bowl champion.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah!
He has the greatest mustache you've ever seen.
Some say it's a symptom of manliness. Others a cause. The mustache.
Why don't you hang it out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score?
Open up the door. It's Dave.
Who?
Dave. D-A-V-E.
Dustin, we're not going to waste airtime on that, okay?
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank you.
Next question.
Thank
next
you very
question.
Much.
Dave Wonstadt.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. We love our opportunity to talk to Coach Wonstadt. We love having him in studio. And Dave, good morning. How you doing? You look salubrious. You look full of good health.
I'm good. I had a great weekend with all the grandkids, you know, 6 of them here. So, without the Bears playing and stuff, I had Tony in to lug Tony around with me. So it was a good weekend. Good weekend.
Good weekend for college football. Let's start there because the Big Ten, surprisingly, or is it a surprise? Illinois beats Michigan. Indiana remains unbeaten, routes Nebraska. Let's talk about Brett Bielema. That's a signature win for him right there.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, regardless of what Michigan's got going on right now as far as, you know, personnel, their passing game, on and on, it's still Michigan, you know, and that's like someone said, oh, well, so-and-so beat Maryland, beat USC, but is that really a good win? Let me tell you something. You beat USC, you know?
That's a good win.
And that's a good win as far as your program goes. So, no. And you know, Illinois did it legitimately. I mean, they did it in special teams. They defense came up with the turnovers. Offense, I mean, they're getting a great year out of their quarterback, Luke Altmaier. I mean, he's making plays. He's throwing the ball more accurate and smarter than what he has, obviously, last year. And he's making plays with his feet. So They got a nice team right now. They really do.
So, Dave, they're 6-1, which means they're bowl eligible. Now they go across the world.
Yep.
Holy Oregon. Mother of God. They
or at least
the
Oregon.
The Oregon Trail. They have to take wagon, sadly. No, they have to fly two time zones, and then they're going to play a team that is a 21.5-point favorite.
Right.
What do you look for in a game like that? I mean, can you pull off an upset on the road like that? We saw how State lose there. What is it that they have to do, and how difficult is it to do that sort of thing, different time zones when you're in a
car? Well, the time zone thing, to me, that's not a reason for anything. I mean, I really, when we were at the Dolphins, we flew to and played Seattle. You know what I mean? That's flying a long way.
That's a long way.
You can't, you know, from Miami.
It's a long way.
And we would go the day before the game and get up and play the game the next day and drink the coffee and let's go, guys. And we had a lot of success most of the time we won. So, I mean, I put that aside. I think what Illinois is dealing with is that was such a great, you know, with the 100th anniversary and the old jerseys and uniforms. And it was such an emotional win for those players, those coaches, that university, that is the number one thing that you're dealing with. You're trying to rein that in. You wanted to enjoy it. Yes. But now it's in the past. It doesn't matter what that happened last week. And now you got to get your mind focused on Oregon. The biggest difference in this game, the speed of Oregon's football team. And it's just not against Illinois. I don't care who you're playing. Oregon made more big plays than Ohio State did. Okay, so this team, wide receiver, their quarterback, Dillon Gabriel, I'm telling you, watch this guy. I think right now he's in the top five. He might be second best odds to win the Heisman. This guy transferred in there from Oklahoma.
Third school.
This guy is a major player. They got running back. I mean, every time they touch the ball, you better get them on the ground or they have the ability to get into the end zone.
All right. We'll be right back with Coach Wannstedt. We'll get into the Bears and the NFL. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.